The following is a special Sports Radio 1290 presentation. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's playoff preview. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Score! Good evening, Winnipeg! Good evening, Manitoba! And for all those joining us live tonight at www.sportsradio1290.com, good evening, universe, and welcome to a very special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are with you until 10:30 p.m. tonight, breaking down all of the NHL playoffs before they get underway on Wednesday night. Very excited to be back on a, you know, it's sort of going back in time for all those who've been with us over the last 2 years. You know that our usual time slot was in the evening, and so it's sort of odd moving from the Saturday mornings back to the, you know, an evening time slot. But to be with Richard and to be with Ezra and to be with Remus and to be with Tim, it's well worth it. Gentlemen, good evening.
Yeah, hey, Drew.
Hey now, Drew.
How are you boys doing?
Good, Drew. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I like going back to the evening. I think it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's just good to be on the, you know, a little extra, a little bonus edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Nothing wrong with that.
No, and we're excited. I mean, this is the time that everybody wants to talk about hockey. You know, the regular season is great, and we love the regular season, and there's a lot of stories, trades, whatever it may be. But now it's going to be, you're going to get to see the best teams face off against the best teams. No more Minnesota. You know, no more teams like that. There's only so much you can handle, but a Minnesota and Edmonton matchup or a Minnesota Florida matchup, we're getting to see the best teams face off against the best teams. Chicago, Vancouver. I mean, the best part about the first round, Desi, is that so many of these matchups we've already seen before. That means there's bad blood. Washington Rangers, 2 years ago, the Fedorov goal, you know, to put it away in game seven. Buffalo Philly have played many times. Chicago, Vancouver, of course. Detroit, Phoenix last year. So many of these matchups we've seen. Bad blood.
Well, Vancouver is obviously hoping that its third time is a charm, because if they can't beat the Chicago Blackhawks this year, they're never going to beat them. And I bet they were hoping that Dallas was somehow going to beat Minnesota in regulation, but it didn't happen. And now we're actually going to see if, you know, Mike Gillis's retooling of his defense and picking up Rafi Torres, and obviously he also picked up Malhotra. He won't play, but we'll see that if, you know, those changes that they made to basically compete against Chicago, because, you know, there was a few issues with Vancouver as far as toughness went and moving the puck out of their own zone. So, yeah, we're going to see a couple of rematches, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we saw an Eastern Conference and Western Conference final rematch of last year. But, you know, we're expecting, you know, this year to be the year that Vancouver
finally beats
Chicago.
I'd be surprised about that. Say Montreal's going back to the conference finals? Is that what you just said?
Wait till our picks, Richie.
Okay.
Everyone's going to have to wait till our picks come out.
Without further ado, let's get started. We're going to go series by series today, so you'll hear each series. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference. Kevin Allen from USA Today is coming up next segment. So we're just going to start with the 1-8 series in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers.
Washington Capitals versus the New York Rangers.
You know, the Rangers backed into the playoffs. Well, you know, let me correct myself there. They didn't back in. They took care of business. They had to win on Saturday.
That's not true.
They needed to win, and then Carolina had to lose.
But before that, they would have beat Atlanta. They never would have come to that.
Right, of course. Fine. So, you know, they
it's a back-in. It's a back-in.
Yeah, well, you know, they took care of business. They had to do what they had to do on Saturday. Carolina couldn't do it. So the Rangers are in their eighth spot. Now, you know, we've talked about it for the last couple weeks a couple times. The Washington Capitals somehow won the Eastern Conference, and yet nobody seems to have known that.
That's fair.
You know, everybody, you know,
no number throughout their, you know, if you look at the significant numbers, the numbers that matter with this Washington team,
yeah,
nothing really stands out.
Except for the fact that they finished atop the conference.
Right.
That's the only, and that's really ultimately the only important one, is that, you know, is you have, you know, you win the games that matter.
Boys, I think there's two things that stand out, Richie, and I realize that, you know, we asked several people about the Capitals' identity, and we didn't get a definitive answer. But I think the two things that stand out for Washington this year both relate to defense. I think it's been well documented that Bruce Boudreau changed the way he was coaching the team this year, mm-hmm. and he changed the systems that they played. Washington was fourth in the league this year in goals against, and they had the second best penalty killing in the league this year. That's huge. That's top two, top four. Defensive statistics right there. And you say to yourself, okay, but can they duplicate that in the playoffs? Are they going to be able to win 2-1, 3-1 against mm-hmm. the New York Rangers? And the identity, in my opinion, has this is a little bit oversimplified, Richie, but I think that they you know, when they went on that remember when during the 24/7 thing, mm-hmm. when Washington was in the middle of that 8-game winning streak, losing streak, I think that's when Bruce Boudreau and had a meeting with his assistant coaches and George McPhee and decided to play a different game, and that's when you could tell that they started to tighten up. And I think Washington, even though I'm actually not going to be picking them in the series.
spoil it for everybody.
The series is actually key to me in one way. You have a New York Rangers defense isn't that deep. It looks good, isn't that deep? There's some young parts there. McDonough's and Kilroy is in and out of the lineup, and Delzato's in the minors. So, Mike Sauer's been a nice addition for them, but he's not a very good offensive player. And then you add in Brian McCabe, who contributes offensively to the power play because that's what they thought Delzato would do. But he lacks defensively. There's really two top defensemen on that team, Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi. And they're very good top defensemen. They block shots. Stahl's terrific. He's positionally sound. He's got a great stick. He can be aggressive when he needs to be. He's going to be an Olympian in 2014. But you match that lineup against, Knubel and Backstrom and Ovechkin. Okay. But then who are you matching? And Washington's depth offensively isn't what it once was. I mean, this team only was 12th in the NHL in shots for, and power play goals for, which I think is more important than maybe efficiency, was 22nd in the league. But you still have guys like Arnott, like Fair, like Perreault, or like Johansson, whatever it may be, the guys are going to be throwing in there. Like Johansson's a good player there. And you have depth players, Drew, Brooks Lake, and then
Mike Knubel, who they just re-signed today.
Yeah, they're going to put him in place on the top line for the most part.
Right.
What you have there is offensive players who can hurt you, not kill you, but hurt you. And the Rangers' defense, I wonder about matchups. And it's all about matchups in the playoffs. And we have a pre-tape with Eric DeHatch, who's going to air later. And, Eric and I were talking about that earlier, matchups. And we talked about in the show, how does a team match up against another team? Can the Rangers' 3 through 6 defensemen match up against Washington's 4 through 12 forwards? I don't think they can. And Washington's defense on the other side is, I think, better than people think. However, they will miss Dennis Wiedemann.
There's a couple things you've touched on, Richard, that I want to talk about. I think that the addition of Jason Arnott, that it was done very late on the trade deadline day.
Very unheralded, too.
I think that is going to prove Jason Arnott, with his veteran leadership and his know-how and his ability and his experience at winning Stanley Cups and winning playoff series, is going to be invaluable in the Washington Capitals dressing room.
Winning.
I think that's one factor. And second of all, I mean, we haven't talked about it yet. The loss of Ryan Callahan, I think, is really going to be the ultimate hindrance to the Rangers to winning the series.
I agree with that, Drew. But we can talk about that first. Ryan Callahan is a catalyst on the forecheck, along with Brandon Dubinsky. That's the heart of the team. Those two guys are the heart of the forward group, okay? So that is, of course, a factor. And I always talked about the Rangers forecheck and the Rangers forecheck and the Rangers forecheck. But when I said to you guys which teams they match up well against, I thought Boston was the best bet for them.
For the Rangers?
Yes.
Yes.
Washington, I didn't think was great, neither was Philly, because Washington has guys who can move the puck. Carlson, great puck mover. Wyman, when healthy, of course. Mike Green, healthy, I think he's going to play.
It's expected that he's going to be back. They're not sure.
Cody in the lineup. Even guys like Schultz and Hannah can get the puck out of their own zone. It's a deeper Washington defense, too. We haven't talked about that. The emergence of Carlson, the emergence of Alzner. Alzner playing against the toughest competition on the other team.
Richie, those guys were logging big-time minutes, and they're both essentially rookies. Well, Carlson is definitely a rookie, but Alzner hasn't played a lot of
games in previous
years either.
Let me list the defense 1-7.
Yep.
Alzner, Carlson, Wiedemann, Schultz, Green, Pody, Hannon. Guys, that's 7 NHL defensemen.
Yes,
this team didn't have 4 or 5 last few years. They were rolling out guys like Tyler Sloan, rolling out guys like John Erskine. This is a different team. It's a deeper team. It's a more well-rounded team. Now, I'm not so sure it's the best team in the East, but I think with the combining the loss of Callahan, which hurts, but not combining, because in reality, I think the loss of Callahan hurts. But it wouldn't even help enough had he been there. I really do like Washington in this series. I think they're the better team. Henrik Lundqvist, one qualifier. Henrik Lundqvist can certainly seal a series, as he's as good as it gets.
11 shutouts on the year for Henrik Lundqvist, and that leads us perfect into goaltending.
Okay.
Washington's goaltending, where nobody's really grabbed that job and held it all year long as being the number one that there's been no question about. Mm-hmm. Does the lack of that number one, worry you at all?
Somewhat, Drew, but I mean, you're talking about the New York Rangers, who are 19th in the NHL and driving shots to the opponent's net. Their power play, they're 17th in the NHL and power play goals for. there's a lot of areas. This team isn't the most offensively gifted team in the league. Gabrick helps, all that stuff, and Prosper back helps. But you know, you lose Callahan, who also contributes offensively, never mind physicality and on the power, you know, and on the forecheck. So you lose him. You're relying on guys like Avery and those guys to pick up a little more. And Nisimov I like a lot, but will he be there? That these are questions that I just don't think the Rangers have enough scoring to make this series. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I think this might be. It really does seem when you break this down, especially with the injury concerns that New York is now faced with Callahan. Mm-hmm. This seems like Washington probably drew the best team for them.
Well, I'm not sure. I think Carolina would have been easier out than the Rangers.
Okay, well, I mean, best team that's in the playoffs. Okay.
Montreal would have been easier too.
You think Montreal, yeah. Even with the history, I think something about Montreal knowing that they've beaten Washington before may have given them an extra boost
of
confidence.
But remember, the Rangers team 2 years ago, which wasn't as good as the Ranger team now, and the Washington team that they lost to was arguably better than the team is now, although I'm not so sure about that.
Right.
Took them to 7 games, and it was very unpredictable.
It's also worth noting that on the season series, the Rangers beat Washington 3-1 in the season series.
I know
it doesn't mean that much, but you know, they it's better than going 0-4 against them, that's for sure. Ezzy, you're jumping in.
Boys, I'm going to agree with both of you when you say that the defense has gotten better, and that includes in goal. I think goaltending, just to answer your question a little bit, Drew, I think the goaltending becomes an issue between Neuwirth and Varlamov if one of them struggles, and then they're undecided if they want to switch their goalie after they make the original switch.
Right.
But this is why I'm going to go with the Rangers. And it is a risky pick. I'm going with the Rangers because I think that if their top guys, like Backstrom, Ovechkin, and Semin, who have had problems in the playoffs in the past producing, and all those guys had off years, by the way, this year, but they changed their style, they changed their identity. They were better this year almost with those guys getting less points. But I think that if those guys don't score early at home and the Rangers are able to capitalize and the Rangers play their defensive style of game, even though they're not going to score a lot of goals, I think...
How many games?
Washington.
You're taking the Rangers. How many games?
I think this is going to 7 games, and I'm going to take the Rangers.
And we're
going to
have all our predictions available on the Illegal Curve Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Also on illegalcurve.com. Remus is going to work about getting those up there.
Before, I can't wait for Richie to say Washington in 5.
Yeah, you're taking the Rangers in 7.
Yeah.
Put it on the board. Richard.
Before I make my prediction, I'm going to say that I do think the New York Rangers have a significant advantage when it comes to coaching. I think that Tortorella's a very good coach. He's done a very good job. His team will be ready to play, and I think that Boudreaux's a great coach, and I think that's an advantage, but I don't think that'll matter. It'll matter in this series, but it will not be the difference, and I have Washington Capitals in 6 games.
Richard's got Washington in 6. I'm going to echo Richard. I'm going to say it's Washington in 6, and only because Henrik Lundqvist is going to steal game 5 for the Rangers. Otherwise, it would be a 5-game series.
But what's Reem's pick? We got to get Reem in here, too.
Remus, you on that?
I'm going with Washington in 6.
There you go. So you got 3 Washingtons in 6, and Ezzy goes Rangers in 7. That's the first prediction. That's the first series. When we come back after these commercial messages, Kevin Allen from USA Today. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Playoff Preview Special, live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
Welcome back to the show. 8:17 in the evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's Playoff Preview Special Edition.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Kevin Allen, USA Today, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'm with you.
There you go, Kevin. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Kevin, we in the last segment, we were talking about the Rangers-Capitals series, and we were discussing the Ryan Callahan injury. So let's turn to the expert and talk to you about it. How dramatically does that injury affect the Rangers' hopes of pulling off an upset?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I just don't even think that the Rangers have a shot now, and I would have given them a shot with Callahan. I mean, you know, not only is he their heart and soul, but, you know, he's this season blossomed into one of their top scorers and on a team where, you know, every goal counts. So I just think, you know, you, and every team there's a guy that you got to have, and if he's injured, it really upsets the apple cart. And in this case, in New York, it's Callahan.
And you still have to, you know, Kev, you still have to get to analyze this series, and I agree with you in terms of Washington having a very good chance there. Do you think the, you know, the key to Washington's success in this series will be maybe their, you know, their secondary scoring depth versus the Rangers after those top two defensemen?
Are you talking about Washington or New York?
Washington secondary scoring, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to me, for Washington, it really comes down to what it's come down to for the last couple of years, and that is, you know, how good is this new defensive system that they've put in? And I think the loss of Weidman for the first round, if he's indeed going to be out, and it appears that he is, I think that's significant because I think the change in the Washington defense, you know, really needed not only a change in their style of play, but maybe, you know, they needed a guy like Weidman to come in. And, you know, he's such a great first passer. And, you know, oftentimes fans forget that part of defense is, you know, possessing the puck. You know, as Wayne Gretzky used to say, if I have the puck, the other team can't score. That's good defense. And in the Capitals' case, the ability to get the puck out of their zone and headman at that, you know, that was crucial. And I think it's still going to come down to whether or not they can prevent the other team from scoring, particularly when they don't still don't have proven goaltending, although I thought their goaltending performed okay this season.
From the Rangers' perspective, do you worry about them after Staal and Girardi?
Yeah, but, you know, saying all that, I mean, I've been saying all year that Tortorella, you know, really should be, and it's probably, you know, Trotz or Bylsma or Vigneault, but he really deserved Coach of the Year consideration because I thought he got a lot out of that defense. You know, I remember looking at that roster going in, and that, not just on defense, but up front, and saying, you know, who's the number one center? I don't like that defense much. I love Lundqvist, but, you know, what can the Rangers do? And, boy, they got a lot out of that defense.
Sure did, yeah.
All season. So I want to discount it, but, you know, it wasn't just all Lundqvist. It was a lot of Lundqvist. But I think this this defense has really stepped up, and it's a little better than we want to give it credit for.
Kevin, there's two players in Pennsylvania that are basically sharing a lot of the headlines, those obviously being Chris Pronger in Philadelphia and Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. Will the expected return of Chris Pronger offset the questions that are surrounding the Flyers' goaltending?
Well, I don't know at Chris's age. Like, I still think he impacts a playoff series because, you know, he's always in the center of things. And, you know, it's not just the way he plays, but it's just his presence and, you know, what he has to say during the series. You know, he's a complete package when it comes to the playoffs. I mean, think back to last year's final and, you know, how he played and what he had to say about it and, you know, getting the puck after the game. I mean, all of that it kind of changes everything. So I think he very much is significant, but I think the goaltending question in Philadelphia is a serious one. And, you know, all season long we kept saying, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to do anything? You know, Bobrovsky, until late in the season, really didn't play poorly, nor did Boucher. I mean, they were okay. They were adequate. But I think always that question was going to be there. And then at the end, when really the they just struggled. I don't know any other way to put it. And, you know, they looked to be in a free fall, and now we're going to question. But I got to believe that Bobrovsky, despite what Peter Laviolette said, I got to believe he's on a short leash because Michael Layton, clearly Peter Laviolette likes him. And last year he did play reasonably well, just wasn't good enough in the final.
It's amazing how Flyers goaltending is always a playoff topic, Kevin. I look at this series, and personally, I see the Buffalo being a very, you know, kind of a sexy upset pick. But I wonder on paper, you know, well, on the ice, really, this Flyers team is three lines deep in terms of scoring. And you look at the Buffalo defense, and, I mean, I'm not sure if they're even three deep. Is that a huge, does that present a huge problem for Lindy Ruff?
Yeah, I was, you know, we were kind of talking about the, you know, we had to pick one upset, and I wanted to go that way because of Ryan Miller versus Bobrovsky, but I went the same way you did, and then I started to look at it, and, you know, Myers didn't progress this season on defense, and then Leopold got banged up as well. You know, I'm just not liking it. I think Buffalo's scoring depth is a little better than we think. But I like this Philadelphia team, and even with the struggles in the last couple or 3 weeks.
We got him up. There we go. There. Drew?
With you?
Yeah, sorry about that, Kevin.
We had some crazy feedback
coming through there.
No problem.
We're joined on the line by Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, looking at the Boston-Montreal series, aside from Carey Price stealing it for the Habs, is there any chance they can win?
I don't think so. But I just absolutely love this series. And I heard the story today, and I don't have all the particulars, but the fact that they moved the political debate because they know that nobody would be watching it. I just love that, and I love Montreal when in the playoffs. And I think we all owe an apology to Pierre Gauthier because we said that, he made a drastic mistake when he traded Halak. And obviously Carey Price has stepped up, but come playoff team time, Montreal's issue to me is the same one it was last season, and that is that their premium players up front in playoff time, when it gets a little more physical, they're small. And I think when you get into the some of the series, it's just hard for them to compete, or at least it wears them out. And by the end of the playoffs, even if you have success, they retired. I thought that happened to them last year in the playoffs with all the success they had early with Halak. By the time they got to the conference final, their smaller forwards, I thought, were kind of weary from being pounded. But, I don't give them much of a chance. I think Boston's a team that's kind of set up for the playoffs. Chara's an impact guy. He can play 26, 27 minutes. Caverley gave them, an extra hand to move the puck up the ice as well. And I think they have not great scoring, but maybe just enough. So I think Boston's okay in this first round.
Kevin, Boston scores by committee, and that's evidenced by the fact that their leading scorer was David Krejci, and he only had 62 points. But who's going to be the key offensive cog that makes the Bruins' offense go?
Well, I think what they really need to happen is they need someone to kind of step up and kind of be, the history of the tradition of the unknown or the unexpected goal scorer. To me, that's kind of a time-honored tradition in hockey where, it's goal scoring that you either weren't counting on, a guy steps forward and that sort of thing. But, the guy that I want to see a lot out of is Nathan Horton. I mean, they brought him in to do that, to be the extra guy, to contribute. And, he had an okay regular season, but I think in the postseason, because he's got some size, I think he needs to step up and produce. And, another guy that, they always want to run out of town because they think, he's the guy that should be moved out. He's being paid too much as Ryder. And, you can't afford to have any passengers, as we all know, in the playoffs. So I think one of those two, if not both of those guys, got to have a good playoff.
Kevin, moving to Pittsburgh versus Tampa Bay, the simple question is, do you see Sidney Crosby returning for this series or at all in the playoffs?
I do think he'll be back.
Really?
To me, the answer I'm always asked is whose call should it be? Well, this is all just obvious. It's Sidney's call. Mm-hmm. And if Sidney feels like he should play, then he should play. And if he doesn't feel like he should play, if he's worried about the long-term risk, then he needs just to tell Ray Sherrill and to move on. I mean, I think, he's the one guy that has all of the information. He knows how he feels. He's got all the doctor's reports. And he should make the decision. But I think Sidney wants to play, and I think he's going to try to play, but I don't think it'll be in the series. If I had to guess, looking in my cracked crystal ball, what I would say is that the Penguins are going to try to get by the first round till Sidney get as ready as you can get if you want to play, and we'll try to utilize you in the second round. And I think they have enough to get by the first round. As much as I love the aura that Steve Yzerman has brought to Tampa Bay, and he has completely changed the culture there. I remember Marty St. Louis told me at the beginning of the season, the minute he walked in the room, we just all felt confident. And that's what I sense as well. I mean, everybody just feels we're going to be better. We're getting better. He's going to make us better. But, boy, they still give up a lot of chances. And I love what Boucher has done behind the bench there. He changes things. He keeps everyone on their toes. He's tried to tell me twice that they're not as bad defensively as I think they are. But I think they are still pretty bad defensively, or at least below average, let's say that. And, they just give up a lot of chances. And that's what Pittsburgh needs in this first round because, they haven't had Malkin, they haven't had Crosby. They've gotten enough goals. But, what's the most underwritten story in the league this year is how Pittsburgh, for the first time in franchise history, in my opinion, and I go back a long ways, they're a defensive team now.
Yep.
Yeah, they really are. And it started last summer when they brought in Mikhailuk, who was a very good one-on-one defender, and they brought in Martin, who can play that game as well. And Ray Sherrill told Bellsma, you know, we still want to be an offensive team. That's our brand. That's what we're selling. I know they did a study in Pittsburgh, and the people said the Penguins were compared to a car, and the Steelers were like a Humvee, and the Penguins were like a Lexus. Well, traditionally that's how the Penguins play. But Sherrill said, we want to maintain that, but we got to be better defensively. And I think they've done that. And I think for that reason, I think they'll be batting down. The goaltending in Pittsburgh, Fleury, is going to be better than Rolison, even though I think Rolison does what he can. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll win that series, and that buys them another couple weeks to get Sidney ready.
Kevin, you mentioned Zdeněk Mihalik, and I know that Richie thinks he's very underrated. They obviously signed him to match up against a line like Steven Stamkos, Marty St. Louis, and Steve Downey. Do you think he'll be successful in shutting down that line? And if so, do you think that the Lightning success is going to depend on their second line, which is obviously includes Vinny LeCavalier?
Well, I think that's a good theory, and I think we're going to have to kind of see on that. But I think Stamkos, he's still not as great as he's going to be. He's pretty darn good now. But, I think we saw late in the season when Corey Perry dialed it up and Stamkos wasn't able to answer. You know, I think we forget how young he really is. And this is going to be really his first, run when the games are all that meaningful. So, this would be a good test for him. But I think you got to go through some pain a little bit in the playoffs as a great player before you really utilize that. So I think you probably could be right. It could come down to, what the secondary scoring or the second line does. But I have a hard time believing that Pittsburgh won't escape with a win in that series.
Kevin, last question. Go back to that crystal ball you were speaking about.
The cracked one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What's your Stanley Cup final, and who do you see hoisting Lord Stanley's cup?
Well, I'm taking a bizarre pick. I don't know that too many people have this, but I'm going with the San Jose Sharks. I love Vancouver. They've been first in everything all year round. But I think that San Jose's flown in under the radar a little bit, and this is a different. I don't want to call it a strategy because it was accidental, but this is a different way for them to go. They started out 12th, they were struggling, and nobody was paying attention to them. Suddenly they woke up, Niemi started to play well, defensively they got better, they kind of found themselves, and because of that we didn't write the entire season, but what are they going to do in the playoffs? And now they're here, and I think some of that pressure is gone, and I think they think they feel better about themselves, and boy, they've played well. I mean, there was that one stretch where in like 32 games, they were 24-4-4 or something like that. I mean, they were impressive. I'm not sure that Vancouver was better than them down the stretch in terms of the way they presented themselves on the ice. So I'm just going that's where it landed on my dartboard. I'm going with San Jose, and I think it's going to be Pittsburgh or Washington in the East. Wow. And if I had to guess right now, I think if Sidney comes back, it could be Pittsburgh.
Wow. Kevin Allen of USA Today, thanks very much for your insight and everything else. Enjoy the playoffs, and we'll be speaking with you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to hockey guys, so call me anytime.
Thanks, Take Kevin. Care, Kevin. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Great. There you go. That's Kevin Allen of USA Today, still to come.
Quickly, Drew, the truth is, we have to, keep it short. Kevin has things to do tonight. It's 9:30 on the East Coast. Could have had that conversation for an hour.
Easily. But good thing that we're here for another 2 hours, so stay with us. Still to come on the program, Eric DeHatchick is going to break down the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Playoff Preview Edition, live on Sports Radio 1290. p.m. here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's Playoff Preview Edition. We just heard from Kevin Allen of USA Today. Still to come, Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And you can join the chat that's going on in the R Desk at www.illegalcurve.com.
The Philadelphia Flyers versus the Buffalo Sabres.
That's the next series we're going to be previewing here on the show. We're going through the Eastern Conference first, and then in the second hour, we're going to be going through the Western Conference. Buffalo at Philadelphia. You look at these series, undoubtedly the goaltending edge goes to Buffalo. After that, it seems like it's Philly all the way.
Well, go ahead, Eddie.
I think that this series is going to surprise a few people. I still like the Flyers in this series, but I think this is going to go to seven games. And, you know, you look at Philadelphia, and they arguably have the most depth in the NHL at the forward position, aside from maybe Vancouver.
You
could argue that Philly almost has better depth.
That's the beauty about the word arguably. You can argue anything arguably.
Yeah, you can argue the word arguably. But I think this series is going to be This is going to be interesting for a few reasons. The Buffalo Sabres, about a month and a half ago, were on the outside looking in on Carolina. The Buffalo Sabres turned up their game after that trade deadline, and I realized that Brad Boyes was a key acquisition, and he actually didn't play that well. But guys like Thomas Vanek and Drew Stafford gave them offense, mm-hmm. and Buffalo actually had a pretty good year as far as goal scoring went. Their top scorers didn't put up massive numbers.
Fourth best team in the NHL putting shots against the other team's net.
The Buffalo Sabres are much like the Boston Bruins in that they score by committee. You look at the team, and yeah, Jordan Leopold, Richie, they're going to miss him big time on the back end. And I think
is he even with him? Even with him, do they have a shot? That's the question. Do they have a shot?
I think they're going to be able to. I think they're going to be able to split the first four games.
Not a shot. Will they win? And
they're not going to win the series, but I think they'll split the first four games.
So like in net, you're winning. You're winning in net. Then you get to forwards, and your forward group is good. It's a good forward group. I like the top line right now. You know, the top line. You think the top line is Connolly with Vanek and Pominville. And they miss Derek Roy. Nobody talks about the fact that they miss Derek Roy, but they sure do miss Derek Roy. He was their top point producer when he got injured. But you still have guys. I love Drew Stafford. He's a great, great player. I mean, you add Brad Boyes, and he provides offensive depth, whether or not he is what people thought he was going to be or not. So you have offensive depth there. You have young players who can make a difference, like Ennis is a speedster. He's great, you know. But that offense is you look at Philly's offense, and then Buffalo's talent essentially negated because it's not as good. Yep. It's good. It's really good. But it's not as good.
You're right. In the 30-team NHL, Buffalo's offense is good. But Philly's is otherworldly. That's the problem.
Here. Let me just read to you the top three centers on the Philadelphia Flyers. We've talked about this on the show for the past few weeks. Giroux, Richards, Breer.
Well, I mean, at three number one centers.
Jeff Carter's on the left side. Van Riemsdyk, Hartnell, Sheridan, Versteeg, Leno. So they're all top two-line players playing in as a group of nine.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
And then you look at Buffalo's defense. Myers, it's good. He's played a lot better in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, you can like Sakara, you can like the talent there, but guys like Sakara, you know, guys like Weber.
Ruff trusts
Sakara more than he trusts Weber. But Steve Montador, really made himself a solid defenseman, but is he the guy you want to bank up against the line of, you know, might be the line of Breer who is here playing with right now? Breer, Hartnell, and Leno.
Yeah.
Are you mental?
That line was ridiculous last year in the playoffs.
Buffalo's defense just isn't good enough. It's almost simple when breaking down the series.
It.
But it is. I mean, sometimes, you know, you can overanalyze things and you can look for reasons to pick an upset, but you really got to be, you know, you really...
Now, having said that, Drew.
Yeah.
Buffalo's lack of defense, Ezzy, and that's why you think it's an interesting series, and I agree with Ezzy in that way. I think it's a sexy upset pick, and I can understand why. Because the lack of defense can be negated by a world netminder. If he stands on his head for two games, their offense wins one. There's three games right there.
Yeah.
I think it's a seven-game series.
Really?
I'm leading to my prediction here. It's Philly in seven as far as I'm concerned.
And I picked the same. And, by the way, I think it's interesting to note, I don't think a lot of people have been talking about a few things as far as the Buffalo Sabres go. Well, I already mentioned that Buffalo was outside looking in as recent as a month and a half ago, but they went on this crazy run where Thomas Vanek decided to be Thomas Vanek, the guy who scored 45 mm-hmm. goals one That's year. Right. But they were doing it with Enroth. Miller was injured, and he's back now. And they were doing that with Jonas Enroth, who he's a very good young goalie.
Yeah.
But that
what you're saying Sabres, is that they don't just rely on Ryan Miller. That's
they
what
don't
you're
just
saying.
Rely
That's
on
right.
Ryan
and
Miller.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right.
And I think that you look back at a couple of months ago when we were talking about the Sabres were actually under 500 at home, I think after about 30 games, mm-hmm. and they turned it up and they became a better team at home.
Well, new owner. And yep. Gave the team, you know, yep. new owner, obviously, does that have anything directly to do with it? No. Gave the team confidence. Gave the organization confidence. Yep. Gave the fans. You know, if fans have a role in making a team play better at home, there's a confidence there.
What, you know, with all due respect to your point about the run that Buffalo went on to just get to the playoffs, if you look back at their schedule, it was nothing dynamite that they were the teams that they were beating there. You know, I want to see against the top flight talent, they just can't match up. I don't, let's go to prediction time. You know, let's put it on the board, and then I'll finish off. I'll make my point at the end. Ezzy, your prediction.
Well, we already touched on it a little bit, but I'm going to go Philadelphia in seven. When I originally was making my predictions last night, I was thinking Philly in five. But I think Buffalo's going to win their two home games, and then Philly will. I mean, I could also see it going six, but I'm just going
to
say
you only
seven.
Get to choose one.
I'm going to go Philly in seven, I could easily see it being Philly in six.
Okay,
we're
documenting these, so we're holding you to them. Philly in seven is what Ezra says. Richard.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Phil. You know, why I think it'll go long. I think because Buffalo's, offense is good enough to keep up with this team for a while, and Miller's very good. Obviously, they lack of defenses, as we said. Another thing, Philly takes a lot of penalties. They take a lot of minor penalties, and their penalty kill. Again, the power play goals against isn't very good. In fact, it's bottom third in the National Hockey League. I think you throw in those factors. I think the coaching is pretty even. Ruff's a little bit better of a coach, to my opinion. I have Philly in seven based on talent, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Buffalo does pull the upset here.
Richie, we got to get Remus and
so
Drew's
predictions. So you got Philly in seven. Two Philly in seven.
I just want to say one thing before we get your predictions here, though. Both of these teams don't have very good special teams like Richie touched on a little bit earlier. But I think people are going to be surprised that this is going to be a good series. It's going to be a very physical series. Obviously, people say, "Oh, you could say that about anything." But this is a series with a lot of young talent. And
oh, it's great! Yeah,
I think this is going to be a series that's going to surprise a few people as far as entertainment value.
Quick on that, I mean, Philly's power play. If you watch any of their games without Pronger on the back end, there, you better be ready because that power play was dreadful without him.
Remus, your prediction.
All right, I'm going to go with Philly in six.
Okay. And I'm going to go with Philly in five, and I'll give you five reasons why. Steve Montador, Mike Weber, Chris Butler, Sean Morrison, and Marc-Andre Grigani are playing big minutes for the Buffalo defense. That ain't cutting it against that offense. I think you guys are reading too much into it.
Drew, you just wanted to say Marc-Andre Grigani.
I actually just say that all the time just walking around at work.
How many minutes
really
do you think Tyler Myers plays in per game, Drew?
25.
30.
No, not 30.
Well, then, 25. If that's what you think, and I would agree with you, if that's what you think, because he's playing 22 per game right now.
Yeah.
Remember, all those minutes will other guys go down.
I know.
And he might wear down if they make the second round. He's a young player. He's 20 years old.
Philly in five.
We'll see.
Okay, we'll see. The predictions are, of course, going to be available on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, also on www.illegalcurve.com, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/illegalcurve. When we come back after this commercial break, Boston against Montreal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Playoff Preview Edition here on Sports Radio 1290. We heard from Kevin Allen of USA Today, and we're still to come on the program, Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail.
The Boston Bruins versus the Montreal Canadiens.
A legendary original six rivalry resumes starting in Boston on, I believe that series gets underway on Thursday night. Two teams with more history than I can adequately describe in 24 hours. Fortunate the opinion that Zdeno Chara is not going to be arrested when he comes back to Montreal. That was what the Bruins got assurance of today.
What if Stephen Harper's in Montreal?
That's a joke, right?
No, that's not a joke. They got Peter Chiarelli got assurance that Zdeno Chara would not be arrested by the Montreal police for his hit on Max Pacioretty.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. It boggles the mind as far as I'm concerned. When you look at this series, which Montreal won, it's hard, you look back at the games recently here, and you don't think that Montreal would have won that series 4-2 in the season series. It seems like Boston has dominated.
Didn't I mention
them.
That off air to somebody, and they're like, what are you talking about? Montreal didn't win the season series. They did, I know.
They did. They won the first 4 games, and then they lost the last two in absolute dominant fashion.
It's a contrast in styles.
It just seems like it's a brutal matchup for Montreal.
It is not a good matchup for Montreal, and which obviously is not a point that is different than yours, Drew.
But I appreciate you reaffirming it, though. That was good. Thank you.
We have to keep in mind.
Reaffirmed it.
Yeah, sure.
That's what
you know
I said.
What? You know what?
You said reaffirm.
It might surprise a few. You guys done?
Yeah, keep going.
I feel like I'm actually being the voice of reason here, which is a very disturbing thought.
Stockpile cans, everybody.
It's a series that on paper looks very heavily weighted towards Boston because Montreal did not do very much in the second half to make you believe that you know they're going to win the series. And you know a lot of people will look at the season series and you should because it shows you how the team stacked up against each other, and Montreal beat Boston four times. But we know that means absolutely nothing.
That means nothing. And another thing is the fact that this defense doesn't have the players on the horses that they had before.
Yeah.
There's no Josh George's slog tough minutes anymore. Spacek, he's not there.
Their defense is riddled with injuries.
You're playing guys. You look at it in terms of who the top competition and who Jacques Martin is entrusted with his in his defense to play against the other team's best players, and the guys who are being asked to play some tougher minutes now, like a Subban, like a Wisniewski, like a Mara. These guys are at the bottom before. Markov was entrusted to do that. We didn't mention him.
Richie, can you believe that Wisniewski finished second on the team in scoring with 51 points?
That's most of the points on other teams, though.
That shows you a few things.
Oh, that also does show you a few things. But Spacek, no. Georges, no. Markov, guys, that's three. Remus, can we get an update, by the way, on Spacek's status? But that's three of your top six. And you're going to go in the National Hockey League, and you're going to try and win a series with three of your top six defensemen out. But big money into those guys, too. Three of your top six. Sure, Subban's capable. Sure, Wisniewski can log some tough minutes in terms of offense. But Hal Gill and Roman Hamrelik, I love Hal Gill. Shot blocker, penalty kill, whole deal. Very solid stay-at-home defenseman. Roman Hamrelik, smart defenseman, but he's so slow.
Well, Hal Gill's hardly
exactly.
Feet of foot also.
My point.
These aren't young guns here, though.
So, and Paul Morris, feet like cement. The Habs defense just doesn't have it, and their offense doesn't have it. You look at their offense, and Ezzie, does that have it? I don't know. You just mentioned it. They don't have a guy on their team with over 51, only one guy on their team with over 51 points.
But they have one guy.
Well, that's the point.
They have one guy, and we all know his name. It's Carey Price. But, a lot of similarities to the Boston-Philly series. The Buffalo-Philly series.
No.
In that both teams would rely on a goalie to steal the series. But Buffalo has better offense.
Yes, they're a better team.
Montreal's defense is better than Buffalo's defense.
With healthy, not right now.
Really, not right now? You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
Surprised that you say that.
Buffalo's defense. Sakara's underrated. Taking Buffalo's defense in that matchup. Drew, Plekanec has 57 points. He's a nice player. He's good. He's a responsible two-way defense, two-way player. And last year, he was given the role on Montreal of playing defensively. He hardly produced offensively, and people read into that. Why is he not? Well, because he's slated to play against the top lines, the Crosbys and the Ovechkins. The problem with the formula last year used against the Crosby, and Ovechkin and those teams was that that's a one-line team. You shut them down with a system. You shut them down with a tough two-pairing defense matchup, right?
Right.
And then you put them on your best defensive line. Boston is a deep team. Boston presents problems.
Well,
Montreal is not deep offensively. Yeah. They're not deep defensively, and they have a great goaltender. But Boston also has a great goaltender, guys. Let's talk about this team for a little bit. We're focusing a little bit too much attention on Montreal as far as I'm concerned. Ezzie, look at that offense.
The problem here is, yes, Drew, I'm going to just going back to what Drew said about Carey Price. Carey Price had a tremendous season. He's arguably a Hart Trophy candidate.
He's my Vezina pick.
He was unbelievable. He could very well win the Vezina. But when you have a team like Boston who holds the puck for so much of the game, you're talking about a top three offense and a very good defensive team. They hold the puck. Guys like Chara, they have Chara and Caberle now, two guys that are arguably top five defensemen, both in the league. Maybe not but Chara. But as far as Montreal goes, if they don't stop those three or even four really strong lines. We talked to Kevin Allen about this. The David Krejci, Nathan Horton, Milan Lucic line. You have all. There's not a 90-point guy on that line, but that's a very young, tough, skilled line. And then you roll out
Bergeron, Recchi, and Marchand.
There you go. And Marchand,
good speed,
is another guy that had a nice rookie year. Montreal is going to have a lot of problems with that. And if you listen or read what a lot of the writers in Montreal are saying, it's that guys like Spacek, who might have injury problems right now, and Hamrelek, because of the injuries they had, those guys wore down. They played too much. Even though Hamrelek is a veteran of 15 years, they played too much. So now you've got these guys who are worn down, and they're facing one of the top balanced offenses in the league. And I don't think enough is made of the fact that Boston right now, mm-hmm. they're extremely young. You've got Mark Recchi at 43 years old, but look at those forwards: Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, Tyler Seguin. These are all very young players who are really at the peak of their careers.
Boston, the third most shots for in the National Hockey League. They don't take a lot of minor penalties, which is going to help them. Especially because Montreal takes a lot of minor penalties. Boston's power play has been an issue, especially late in the season. That could be a concern. But Boston also, there's other things that they excel in as well. And I think that when you look at, faceoffs are fifth. Their record wasn't inflated by the shootout. I like this team through and through. My one concern, well, two concerns, really. It's the Boston offense is really deep, but sometimes all those players who contribute, if they go cold, they're not top 90-point scorers.
Right.
They can go cold at the same time. The other issue would probably be the fact that Boston does allow a lot of shots on against. Now, they're inflated totals out of Boston, but 29th most shots on goal in the National Hockey League, Drew, and a lot of that's driven from, by the Boston stat keeping. But even so, if Tim Thomas isn't playing his 940 save percentage clip, Montreal gets a couple goals. You never know.
What about Boston's defense? I know that you got Cabrera and Chara, and after that it seems like there's a pretty big the guys they have playing third and fourth minutes.
I don't
seem like they're third and fourth players.
I don't mind Sadenberg's a good skater. He can move the puck. He's a solid player. Physically he does it all. Has a lot of the tools, but he does not necessarily there with his head in terms of the hockey sense and making the smart play. Boychuk is a pretty good solid player, not the most fleet of foot, but he's a solid defenseman. He plays well with Chara there. I don't love Cabrera and Sadenberg, and that's a defense combination that's going to be taken advantage of as far as I'm concerned later on in the playoffs, not against Montreal when their second line really doesn't leave much to be desired.
Right.
It really leaves much to be desired, excuse me.
Right, they can get away with it against Montreal because Montreal doesn't have the horses to throw at them in the offensive side of the game. But, I mean, you look at Boston's fifth and sixth defenseman there, and they're...
But, Drew, again, you're talking about things down the road.
I know I'm talking about things down the road. I think they should be fine in the first round. That's why we've talked about this numerous times. You didn't like the Cabrera deal, but I say to you, without Cabrera, imagine that defense.
And without Cabrera, do you think they still win the series?
Probably, but I'm not as confident as I am right now when we start doing our predictions.
Without Cabrera, what do you put their chances at percentage wise?
Without Cabrera, yeah. I think they're still probably at a 60-65%
clip.
And
with Cabrera, what do you put them at?
I'm going to say 80-85%.
So it's a first round. I don't agree with that, but it's a first round pick. Joe Colburn, other second round draft pick, whatever it was, worth that much of a percentage increase?
Well, you know what?
That's a question.
If they flame out in the second round, then you could be right. But I think that
we don't always go to our right picks. I didn't like the Marian Hossa trade for Pittsburgh that year,
right?
And he'd end up taking them to the finals. So
exactly.
You're going to bring up other good predictions. Bring up the ones.
Hossa's gone to the finals 3 years in a row.
That's right. Yeah,
that's right. He finally won that one time. But let's go to predictions. Let's touch on our predictions real quick, Ezzy.
Even though I completely just basically spoke very highly of Boston, I'm going to go with Montreal. I'm going to take, even though Montreal has struggled to score goals, and Boston, on paper, at every position, except for goal,
this bizarro world?
Is a better team, I think Carey Price is going to steal the series.
If you're picking the Montreal, that's the reason why.
Price steals the series.
If you're saying Carey Price is going to have a mediocre series and you're picking Montreal, then we've got real problems.
Montreal and six.
Montreal and six.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. He could be a genius, or we could be making fun of you for the next couple of years about that.
Probably the latter.
Yeah, more likely.
Boston in five.
I'm going to echo Richard again, Boston in five as well. I just don't see Montreal.
It's a lot of copping going on here, Drew.
I was only on two. It just so happened that you get to say, I'll tell you what, next series I get to predict before you, and then we'll see who's copying who.
All right, there you go.
Okay, there you go. So there you have it. Ezzy says Montreal in six. Richard and I say what? And then Richard and I go with Boston in five, each of us. Our predictions are available on www.illegalcurve.com and on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve. When we come back after this commercial break, we're going to break down Pittsburgh and Tampa, the 4-5 series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show special playoff preview edition. O'clock in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show special playoff preview edition. In the first hour, you heard from Kevin Allen of USA Today. In case you miss any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and you can subscribe and have it automatically sent to your computer.
The Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Really, if you look at all eight series that are going on in the to make up the first round in the Stanley Cup playoffs, this might be one of the most intriguing series. You have the Penguins, a shorthanded Penguins team, playing without their core in Crosby and Malkin, versus the upstart Tampa Bay Lightning, who've really went from doormat to a respected franchise even quicker than they would have thought about it. A 4-5 series. The team split the four meetings in the regular season, two games apiece. Of course, those games, it was Crosby's game against the Lightning the last time he really played any significant meetings.
Shouldn't have played that game.
Of course he shouldn't have, but that was the first time we've seen him in an NHL action. You know, when you look at this series...
Last time, you mean?
Sorry, yeah, the last time we saw him in NHL action. That's true. Thank you, Richie. When you look at this series, you know, just a lot of variables that are yet to be determined and how it's going to play out. What do you see as being as the key for, say, Tampa Bay winning this series?
Well, the keys are kind of, you know, they're really tied together, Drew. It's the Pittsburgh offense and the Tampa Bay defense. And Kevin Allen spoke about it earlier from USA Today. He doesn't trust Tampa Bay's defense and they give up too much chances. I don't disagree with him. I think Brewer stabilized it a bit. But my main issue there is, sure, maybe they give up a lot of chances, but how many guys on Pittsburgh can bury those chances?
Well, that's a fair point. I like that point because you look at the Pittsburgh. This isn't Crosby and Malkin's Penguins. Jordan Staal is probably their best offensive player on this team at this moment?
Yes.
And he's not known for being an offensive dynamo.
No.
So, I mean, really, you know, with Tampa Bay's weakness on defense, which we all agree about, but it's improved from the beginning of the year, especially with Brewer solidifying the back end after the trade deadline, do you think that Pittsburgh has enough firepower, has enough offense, to exploit that Tampa Bay weakness?
True or false, Sidney Crosby led the Pittsburgh Penguins in scoring by 15 points, even though he played in only 41 games. The answer's true. But, Drew, the obvious answer to your question is that Tampa Bay is going to have to play the way that Guy Boucher is very fond of to be successful. And that's only one way. They have to be in possession of the puck, and they have to be dominant, and they have to spend a lot of the time in that defensive zone, Pittsburgh's defensive zone. Pittsburgh is a very good defensive team. They didn't have Crosby or Malkin for the second half of the season, and they still managed to finish only 1 point behind Philly for the division lead. They can win games. They can win low-scoring games. Marc-Andre Fleury is one of the best goalies in the league. He's a first overall pick. He's a Stanley Cup winner, and Tampa Bay has to have those guys going. In my opinion, Stamkos, Downey, and St. Louis, they are absolutely, it's going to be absolutely necessary for that line to be going early for this team to win. There's absolutely no way that Tampa Bay is going to beat Pittsburgh in low-scoring defensive games. Guy Boucher has got this team playing a type of high-octane, quick-attack offense.
1-3-1.
And all of Tampa Bay's good defensemen, maybe aside from Brewer, are better offensively than defensively. Pavel Kubina is very slow on the back end.
He makes bad decisions.
Victor Hedman is still too young to be considered a guy that can log you 25 minutes and shut down those top lines in Pittsburgh. So I think Tampa Bay is going to have to win this game by opening it up.
You say Hedman can't stop the top line of Pittsburgh. Well, the top line of Pittsburgh was the third line earlier in the season.
That's just it. I think that's why it's, I think, a perfect matchup for Tampa Bay, because their weakness, Pittsburgh can't exploit their weakness
see.
And as good as Pittsburgh's defense is, and as Kevin Allen said earlier in the show, how Pittsburgh has become really a defense-first team, is their defense good enough to shut down?
It is. It is. I mean, Orpik, Letang, Martin, Mihalik. Many teams in the NHL will take that top four.
Well, I mean, what's the series going to come down to then? If you say that if Tampa Bay's defense isn't that good, but Pittsburgh can't score, and Pittsburgh's defense is good enough to shut down Tampa Bay's offense.
In a vacuum, you're going to point to goaltending, right?
Well, you would think goaltending, but you know the truth of the matter is Marc-Andre Fleury is you know, like, as he rattled off all of his career achievements. In a seven-game series, though, I think Dwayne Rolston can...
I disagree.
I don't have the advantage.
I think Fleury's better. But Rolston's pretty good now.
I don't think it's a huge advantage for Pittsburgh.
I think it's not huge. It's not huge. And goaltending is very unpredictable. But Tampa Bay's offense, Drew, I mean, against Pittsburgh's defense, Pittsburgh's got that really good top four. Really, really, really good top four.
Well, but then let's look at the third line on Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, well, I mean, they have Dominic Moore, guys. Dominic Moore, Teddy Purcell. Moore can skate. Purcell can score. Purcell had 51 points this year playing on a variety of roles. Only 14 minutes a game. Nate Thompson's been a great addition. Adam Hall's got a booming slap shot. There's guys that can contribute in different ways on this team. Ryan Malone is a huge, huge, huge part of this series for Tampa Bay because of his net presence in the playoffs. Think about Thomas Holmstrom in Detroit, and that's what Ryan Malone can provide for Tampa Bay.
Richie, well, when you're throwing out a third line of Teddy Purcell, Ryan Malone, and Dominic Moore...
Ryan Malone's going to play in the second line if Purcell plays on the third line.
Right, but I mean, if you're...
Bergenheim on the left side is a good offensive player.
That's a pretty good third line.
People haven't talked about it.
Well, and then let's look at
Pittsburgh. People talked about it, but you're not going to hear a lot about it up here.
Look at Pittsburgh's third defense pairing. Can it match up?
Ingo? Derek Engelin?
Yeah, can it match up with that?
I don't think those guys are going to get on the ice enough to make a huge, huge, huge difference.
Well, they're going to have to play at some point during the game.
It'll make a difference, Drew.
These guys are still going to have to play, between 10 and 12
minutes
a game.
I agree, but again, Drew, I mean, when you're talking about that, you're talking about at the end of the playoffs when the big guys were running down. Philly's bottom six wasn't bottom two last year wasn't as big of a deal early in the playoffs because A, Pronger was fresh, and then later, B, because they played a team in Chicago that was deeper than the other teams that they were playing. But you look at the other guys, Lovejoy, whether it be Lovejoy or England or Niskanen or, moves the puck. I mean, those guys are serviceable. It's fine. I mean, Tampa Bay, those guys we mentioned on Tampa Bay are good. They're not great third liners. It's going to come down, to my mind, into the second line. Mihailuk, I think, is going to get matched up continually against the Stamkos line. We asked it in the question to Kevin Allen. It's going to be the Le Cavalier line with Gagne. Can Gagne pick it up? Le Cavalier,
yep.
Gagne combination. Malone circled in there. Can Le Cavalier's line, because he's got the talent, take it to Pittsburgh's second unit?
Richie, I think out of the four series in the Eastern Conference, I think this is the toughest to call.
Absolutely.
I think that this series could go either way. It's going to seven games, in my opinion, for sure. You'll have to wait to see who I pick. But I think this series, and this goes back to what you're saying here, this series comes down to Tampa's offense versus Pittsburgh's defense. And Pittsburgh is I know we might have focused on this, quite a bit, and our listeners might be saying, okay, Richie and Ezzy, give it a break with, analyzing Zdeněk Mihalík. But the thing is, Pittsburgh would not be in fourth place. They didn't have Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin at all in the second half, and they finished fourth, and they almost finished second. That tells you something, Drew. That tells you that they've got a really good defensive core and a very good goaltender. How else can you explain it?
And Malone is splitting significant time, either between the Moore line or the Cavalier line, so it really depends there.
Compare the coaching. Interesting coaching matchup.
It's very interesting.
You have Guy Boucher, the innovative rookie head coach, never been in the Stanley Cup Finals before, or Stanley Cup Playoffs before, against Dan Biles, my guy who... really, I think he proved to be one of the top flight coaches with the job he's done with the Penguins this year, despite their injuries.
I couldn't agree more.
I would expect that he. Yeah. I mean, I expect he'll be up for the Jack Adams, and he might very well win it as coach of the year.
I love Boucher, and if you're starting an organization, that's a tough one there between those two guys. Bilesma, based on the fact that he has, gone to the finals 2 years in a row and been through the trenches there, a little bit more experience in terms of the playoffs and the players responding, I give him a little bit of an edge, but I mean, that's an edge that will be gone in a year or two with Boucher. I think Tampa, this is a good matchup, as we said. I mean, I like the Pittsburgh defense. I think they can play a good, solid defense. Can they exploit Tampa Bay's lack of, defense? And you put up the Tampa Bay defensemen. We talked about them. We haven't really talked about them a lot. You put up Oland and Brewer and Lundin and Hedman and Clark and Kubina. It's not a bad six, 1-6, and they're playing against a bunch of guys who are fairly average. When the Pittsburgh lines are not very tight, not very deep, Staal can hurt you offensively. Neil can, but he's more of an up-and-down player, dependent on a creator beside him. Kunitz is in and out. Kovalev can hardly skate. The other guys don't scare me at all. I don't think Pittsburgh, you can see where I'm going here.
Yeah.
I don't think Pittsburgh can score enough goals in this series to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Predict it.
Tampa Bay in six.
Okay. Of course, these predictions come with the caveat that if Crosby comes back, all bets are off.
Of course.
So, with a grain of salt, no Sidney Crosby, Richard says Tampa in six. Ezra.
Before I give you my prediction here, I'm going to say that I think that Chris Letang and James Neal are two guys that are going to play very well and rack up points in the series for Pittsburgh. And I think Victor Hedman and Stamkos are two guys that are going to lead the Lightning Hedman especially, I think, is going to play very well in the first round and throughout the playoffs. I got Tampa in seven.
So we have Tampa in six, we have Tampa in seven. Ezzy, I've always said you are smart beyond your years. I got Tampa in seven as well. We'll see. Series starts...
It's funny, nobody took Pittsburgh. We'll have to see if Remus took Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well,
it's a little surprising.
Series starts Wednesday in Pittsburgh, and of course, all the predictions are available on www.illegalcurve.com and on our Twitter page, @illegalcurve. You can always send us your predictions, and we'll have some fun with that as
well. Sure.
As the playoffs go on. You know, we want to hear from our fans at @illegalcurve. Send us your predictions, your comments, everything else. Join the chat that's going on at www.illegalcurve.com.
Apparently it's back in there.
Yeah, it sounds like everyone's chomping at the bit for these playoffs to start. So if you want to get your two cents in there, go into the Illegal Curve chat room at www.illegalcurve.com. Guys, let's head to break. When we come back, our interview with Richard's interview with Eric Vahacek from earlier today, and we're going to start on the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's Playoff Preview Edition, live on Sports Radio 1290.